Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
From the dark end of the street. It's kind of my happy music, so Friday's here. Joining me is my friend Greg Lotus. Greg, what is up?
Not much. Just enjoying a nice clear day. A little 40-degree weather in the air, but that's the way it goes in North Dakota.
Give me a weather update. How's this week been looking for you? We've had fires and smoke, and it's been in the high 80s and hovering around 90 degrees near the coast, which is not normal, so a little bit warmer. What about North Dakota? What do you guys got going?
We got some of your smoke up here, actually. started last on Monday.
Really?
Oregon wildfires as well, but they showed the path of the smoke coming from your area, and which is tough to see, and than the Oregon area, but it was nice and warm in the top 60s, maybe early 70s earlier in the week, and now it's turned cold and not really cold, but it's supposed to start warming up again back early in the weekend and then going on to next week. So can't complain, really, because it snowed every month of the year except July in North Dakota. So
it snowed in June and May?
Yep.
Well, you know what that means. The end is near.
I've been out fishing for the May opening weekend, which is the second weekend in May, right, and have gone out in the morning in snow and come back in 55-degree weather. in one fishing trip.
That is awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
What about where'd you go fish? Devil's Lake?
Well, at that time, it was fishing in Canada. And then we went to Lake Skakawea here in the May of the long weekend for North Dakota. So, it's the weather can change on a dime.
Oh, my God. So could you educate everybody on the pronunciation of, is it Sakakawea or
Sakajawea or yeah. Sakakawea? Everyone here calls it Sakakawea, but Sakajawea would be the way you'd pronounce her native way. So usually it's people from out of town or not of the area that do this Sakajawea.
People from Minnesota.
Well, I'm not going to name names, but possibly.
Possibly. All right. What about, that's funny. Before we get off the subject of fishing, I'm not much of a fisherman, as you know, but Greg is. He grew up on Thunder Bay. And what is that, Lake Michigan?
No, that's Lake Superior.
I knew that. Just want to make sure you did. Your favorite, you like to eat, and we'll talk about food a little bit, but what is your favorite fish of all time?
Without a doubt, brook trout.
Without a doubt, brook trout?
Yeah, because brook trout, the world record brook trout is 13 pounds, which sounds like a nice size fish. But the ones I'm talking about in the creeks and the rivers around Thunder Bay, there is a brook trout, and a good brook trout there would be 10 or 12 inches. And my dad always used to take me to Pitch Creek. The creek was no wider than maybe a rod and a half long. And it was covered in, you know, in the middle.
What the hell is a rod and a half? I know meters. I know that's like a British term, isn't it?
No, fishing rod. A fishing rod and a half, you know. Okay. So, see, if people are listening and they fish, then they know how long a rod and a half
I'm not is. A fisher. I like fishing for people that aren't very smart.
Well, true, but my dad would take me down there, and it was in the middle of the woods in the boreal forest in Canada, and the trees would overhang, and there'd be rocks, and you'd have to wait, and you have to be really quiet, and then you'd drop your line in, which is a very thin diameter line, sometimes over a beaver dam or right at the base of one. And these little brook trout would bite on a tiny hook and a worm. And we'd catch maybe 5 or 6, some of them 8 inches, some of them 10, a whopper is 12. Once in a while, you'd win the jackpot and get a 14. But we'd bring them home, cut the heads off, open up the guts, run your thumb through the back, clean them out, pat them dry, have them some flour with some salt and pepper, roll them in the flour, and then pan fry them in butter until the skin gets crispy. And then all you do is pull out the whole backbone, all the bones come out, and you're left with a crispy skinned, the flesh of the meat looks like salmon meat. It's nice and pink and firm, and it's so good. You could eat the skins, the tail, everything, because it was that crispy. And we'd have that with some potato pancakes that my mom would make, and some toast with some butter on it. And I tell you what, you just knew that when you caught those fish, especially with your dad, and once in a while you'd turn the corner of the stream and run into a moose, or God forbid, twice ran into a bear with 2 cubs.
And
you got a stringer full of fish on your hip, and you just try to back away slowly. But I've been as close as 20 feet. You know, the woods are so thick there, and you literally around the corner of the stream, and you could see the bear in the water, and you don't want to see the cubs. But once I did see 2 cubs with her, but it just backed up and got out of there. But they're in that stream for the fish too, and because they're so damn good. But there's a whole bunch of good fish, especially on where you guys are on the coast there.
Yeah, but I would tell you this though, my favorite eating fish, and I eat a lot of salmon, but my favorite fish is walleye.
Oh yeah, walleye's is close second to the brook trout, but walleye is a good, I mean, that's, you can do it any deep fried, pan fried, boiled.
Oh my God.
Anything. Yeah. Anything.
No, it's, and I never, being from California, never been to kind of the northern plains, I'd never eaten walleye in my life. And I got up there and everybody's like, oh, walleye. And I'm like, well, like, what? It's absolutely delicious. Absolutely yeah. Delicious. The, I've got an email that I got earlier in the week. And Mac, I have 2 young girls, 8 and 4, and I know yours are older. What advice would you give me for raising them to become strong, independent ladies? And how would you suggest that I develop them as critical thinkers? It's from one of my Marines from years ago. So you have a daughter. Olivia's a little bit headstrong, and I've got 2. First of all, raising girls different from raising boys?
I would say so. I don't know if it's vastly different, but I think with girls today, as opposed to the 70s and, you know, the housewife era where it was almost your maid to have, if you're a wife, to stay home and raise kids. But raising a daughter, I think I apply the same rule to all my kids, and that's, it's not what I teach you to do, it's what I teach you to do for yourself. And I think there's in today's world and in the United States of America, raising kids, it's happening with a bunch of parents that can't say no. They don't want to tell their kid no. They don't want to have structure or rules, because that means that it causes confrontation or a fight, or the kids will rebel or whatever. But if you're not giving your child, a girl or a boy, a sense of autonomy, and that means that they can operate by themselves, they don't need someone to hold their hand or go with them or do things all the time, then how are they going to adult? If you're not giving them structure and rules, then to me, you're at fault as far as not being able to raise someone that's going to be a productive member of society. And that includes challenging them. That includes not making excuses for them. You know, the fact that they have to develop a sense of trust and honesty and understanding, empathy to others. And I think one of the most important things to teach kids along with autonomy is to say that, hey, everybody is different. And what what you think is the way it should be is not the way it is for everybody else, and to respect that. But also to have to respect your own set of values and rules, and not, you know, curve under pressure when it comes to someone challenging you. Stand up for yourself and be accountable and be heard if it's something that's passionate to you and to your cause. Because a lot of kids, they're afraid to show emotions and stuff, and that's why I think sports helps, music helps. Being involved in dramatic arts or band or whatever, a sense of team, a sense of commitment. You know, when they start something, they have to finish it. There's no quitting. If you don't like it and you don't want to do it again, fine. We won't pay for it, but you're finishing what you started. And I think all those combined is one of the reasons why so far we haven't had to bail any of our kids out of jail. Or they haven't got suspended and they get good grades and stuff. But teaching people to shake hands and look people in the eye and not look and stare at their phones and stuff, and be able to read and spend time with yourself and be happy with yourself. And also know that if there is problems or you're having a problem, that no matter what, you can always come and talk to us because we love you and we won't judge you. You may not like what we have to say all the time or our answers, but you can be sure, you can be absolute sure that what we're doing is in, and is what we think is in your best interest and because we love you. So, I mean, you know, that's my stance.
It's interesting because we didn't talk about this or anything, but I agree with you. I think people make too much of a deal that, oh, girls are so different. Well, girls are different. I mean, in fact, I've been a boy my whole life, okay? And when I'm with my sons tend to say the things that I saw and thought when I grew up, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Your girls are so different. They look at the world different. And you'll be driving down the street and they'll say, you know, Daddy, when I look at that tree, yeah. And they'll tell you something you've never thought of in your life or even conceived of. And it's just a difference they look. But I agree with Greg. They're not as different now as probably they have been in the past. And I think that's probably a good thing because I, like with Catherine, you know, to me, when your kids begin to participate in group events, that's one of the things I love as a dad, because you can, all the things that I know that are important pieces in life, respect for other people, hard work, being a great teammate, assuming the role that they assign you, no matter what it is, and working as hard as you can to do that well in the hopes that maybe they'll give you a larger role. Well, Catherine got involved in that in theater and the arts, and she learned all those lessons in the arts. Colleen didn't play any sports, and then we moved to California. In middle school, she started playing volleyball, and then she started to swim. And then the water polo coach saw her swim and said, "Hey, would you come out and play water polo?" And so Colleen started. Once she got into athletics, it gave me, I think, a better vehicle as a dad who's played sports and coached and loves them to teach her life's lessons about don't quit, about all these things, the infrastructure that goes into it. So I believe that I think we make too much of a big deal about girls are so different. I don't think they are. And I think I agree with Greg in terms of, you know, the same rules apply now, especially for girls. They want to compete in this world. They want to compete for jobs. You want to be somebody's equal. Guess what? Suck it up, buttercup, right? You better be tough, and you better be able to take on what life has to dish out, or guess what? You know, then you'll be relegated to the same heap that everybody else is that can't really hack it and can't stand there and take a punch to the face and come back and in an articulate, determined, and tough way and be an achiever. And so to me, athletics or any kind of group activity, but one other thing Greg said that has been my life experience, now kind of Colleen turned 17, she's in her senior year, and she'll go off to college or something next year, but if you don't teach them discipline when they're little, and I mean before the age of two, you will fight them forever if they don't get it. And if they do, your job as a parent is to give them what they need, not what they want. And I watch people who parent now, and I just think, good God, that looks like the most miserable experience, because shit for brain doesn't accept no when you say it. No.
Yeah.
And they just continue to go about it. And so it's amazing. But it's interesting. I don't think it's that different. How do you teach the other part of this question? How do you teach young people to be critical thinkers?
Well,
let me just give you the background, because Colleen and I we have this thing where we watch movies now, but the movie has to have won Best Picture in its year, and that you nominate three, and I get to pick one out of the three. So that's how we watch pictures.
Okay.
Well, we watched In the Heat of the Night with Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger in it.
Yeah.
Last week, and then we watched 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, good movie.
So we were talking about. I asked Colleen. I said, "Do you think you live in a racist country?" And so we had a conversation about that. But if you, this whole narrative is the police are out hunting black males. If you look at every statistic that tracks them, the actual answer to that is no, they're not. And yet the popular narrative everywhere you go is this is a fact. And it's amazing to watch on a daily basis. And so if you get your news from Facebook and Twitter, you believe that. And I asked both my daughters, how many people do you think the cops, unarmed black men, the cops shot last year? Colleen, 200. Less than five. And Colleen looked at me like, what? And I asked Catherine. She said probably between 50 and 100. And when I said less than five, she just looked at me too. And so how do you teach young people to be critical thinkers? Your thoughts on that?
To me, it's a simple start, but it can get very complex. And that is to challenge them. Because without challenge, you cannot have growth. Whether you look at a muscle, without it being challenged and lifted and being torn down and then built back up again, it cannot get stronger. So when you challenge kids and take them out of their comfort zone, because everyone loves to operate where it's comfortable. You know, if you're a social person, then you like to be in social situations. But if you're someone that likes to be by themselves, you'd rather take a problem and go in the room and solve it rather than work with a group. Well, if you're not putting your kids in challenging situations and also challenging them daily, and when I say daily, you know, for example, we use a goal kind of process here within our house, and I will say to the kids, going to practice, what is your goal today? And they said, for example, yesterday my son said, I'm going to really work on my hand placement when I'm working a blocking drill because I tend to get my hands too wide, and I'm going to work on that. And so when they come home, I say, so what did you do and how did it go for your hand placement? He said, and then you can see them start remembering certain plays. And I remember I did this, but then I fixed it. And then coach talked to me about, hey, I had a good hit on this guy, and it's because I had my hands on the inside. So when you look at that, that's a sports analogy, but you can do that often with subjects such as race, subjects such as abortion or religion, whatever you'd like to say. But if you look at the way you challenged your daughters and said, you know, gave them a question that, you know, obviously is the social movement is on everybody's mind. We see it daily. But you gave them a question and then you challenged them. And then when they got the real answer, then the dialogue started, I'm sure. And that is that, in a sense, what creates critical thinking, not just here's the news, I'm going to shove it down your throat, you're not going to question it, and you're not going to say, you know, you're not going to do or say anything about it. So I think that's one of the ways you could do that.
You know, I think it, and you teach it all the time, whether, and it doesn't matter what you're discussing in the house. But the fact that they are going to be challenged, that you will call bullshit, that's bullshit. Where did you hear that? Or, and it could be about, you know, sports, or it could be about, you know, popular culture. It could be about anything. But the fact that your premises are going to be, if you think you're just going to throw out some bullshit statement in this house and that we're all going to nod and say, oh, okay, you're like in the wrong house. You walked up the wrong driveway because that's
or
not.
Or you better move. Or you better move.
Because that's not how we do it here. And so to me, you teach those critical thinking skills because if they know they're going to be challenged and if they know they're going to have an opinion, then they better be able to back it up. I mean, because, you know, so we had this conversation about critical thinking I had with my daughters. So it's, the email is kind of interesting. And so I said, think about this. That whole narrative that the country believes to be fact is untrue. It's not supported by the data, you know. And you have another one. And I'm not a big Donald Trump fan. I mean, I like policies. His bedside manner is horrible. But the truth is the United States has one of the lowest mortality rates with COVID-19 of any developed nation. Yet the popular narrative is this thing's been totally fucked up. So it's like, okay, so what's your metric? And so to me, that's the part you have to teach is, okay, so what is your metric? You said that. What's your metric? Where'd you get it? And if you don't teach your kids that, then you know, then they'll walk in and they'll just wheel off any bullshit, and it's, you know, it's going to like, well, that's my opinion. Oh, really? And so that's how you think that's going to work? That you're just going to offer an opinion like that, and then you want to argue about it like it's fact, but we all know it's not.
But see, and it's one thing to do it and throw the bullshit out at home, where you might get a ribbing or whatever. But you start throwing that same line of thinking towards teachers or people of authority, you can get into some serious shit.
Well, and to me, what's amazing about it is now, right, the tyranny of the intellectual mob, right? Do you stand? So when LeBron James says black men, so the guy in Wisconsin who's broken restraint twice and is reaching into his car and there's a knife on the floorboard that gets shot, right? LeBron James' response is, you know, this has to stop. They're hunting us. I'm afraid. And nobody, not one reporter, puts their hand up and says, hey, LeBron, you know that he resisted. There's a warrant out for his arrest. He broke police restraint twice, and there was a knife on the floor of that car. You know that, right? Now, so the question is, why wouldn't anybody say that?
When's the last time LeBron James was hunted?
Oof.
Like, come on, man. He lives in a palace, and he doesn't have, never mind white people problems or black people problems, he doesn't have any problems because he's got rich problems.
Right. He's got. Right, he gets O.J. Simpson justice. He gets rich people treatment. So, but the question. So, in front of God and everybody, we make this statement, these statements, and nobody will put their hand up and say, "Hey." And so, to me, that's the world. So you can go to school and you can say crazy shit. And guess what? Are you going to get any pushback now?
No,
because you'll get canceled. Right?
Yep.
You'll get fired by the district. You'll get canceled by whatever because you actually had, you know, were attempting to engage in some kind of discussion. And in my opinion, the important thing is that, look, you're not going to have the discussion about black-on-black murder rates in this country or black teen pregnancy or Hispanic teen pregnancy until you get through this police violence thing. So at some point, we all have to be willing to come to the table, put our feelings on hold, and say, let's have an honest discussion about this, right? And who was it? Jason, whatever his name, said, look, if you cooperate with the police, nobody gets shot, period.
Yeah. Imagine that.
So we can't solve, and then we can't have a discussion about inner city poverty and what keeps people in there. Is it pregnancy rates? Is it illiteracy? Is it a combination of both? And that's the issue, this discussion that we need to have. But until you teach the critical thinking and, you know, Greg and I, you know, we'd talk about anything on McLotus. We would talk about anything. People say, don't talk about religion. Don't talk about whatever. And we were like, pfft. And as long as you're respectful and of the argument, right, then, and we are most of the time, then you could talk about anything. But now it's like you're living, it seems like, in this world where, yeah, you can't talk about that. You can't say that. And I think it's horrible, especially for young people, as you try to develop them intellectually.
Well, one of the funny thing that you say that is because I think it was last year it started where Olivia would ask for something and I'd be like, absolutely not. And then she'd say, God, you're being so rude, Dad. And I said, what do you mean? Well, that hurts my feelings and stuff. And I said, it's not my job to make you feel good constantly. And if I have to say no to some things, it's for a reason. So it's got nothing to do whether I'm polite or rude. It's called being a father. It's my job. She didn't like that answer.
And let me tell you, for those of you guys who don't know, Olivia's a tough customer, right?
She does well for herself. She's not afraid.
She's not afraid. All your kids they're also different. But again, to me, most parents cower at that. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Did I hurt your feelings?
Yeah.
And I remember I had that conversation once with Colleen and I said, oh, baby, come here. You want daddy to give you a hug? I said, suck it up, man. I care about your feelings, but not about this bullshit.
No.
She's like, she looked at me and said, I knew you were going to say that. I'm like, well, come on, man. Look, you call in the world out there. Guess what happens when you don't make your car payment?
Hi.
Some Hispanic dude with a video camera comes and takes your car and you're on TV in like a car repo man, reality show next week.
Yep.
That's what happens. You don't pay your rent payment. If it wasn't COVID, you'd get your ass evicted. Right.
That's right.
And when life comes for you, and you're a great example of it, Greg. Not when life kicks you in the stomach and the face, but how about when life kicks you 5 times in the stomach, 6 times in the face, and 4 times in the balls? Can you get up after that? Because if you do, you win that time. And so we don't teach that, and that's why it's kind of interesting that the whole my work relative to this post-traumatic winning thing is the problem with suicide now is not people with serious mental illnesses. It's people that are simply overwhelmed by life and they don't see a way out because they haven't been taught the life skills and they're overwhelmed and they say, I'm out.
Yeah, well, we just experienced that this week, actually, after I talked to you on Friday. Over the weekend, Lawson found out one of his teammates on his football team, his dad had committed suicide early or late in the weekend or early Monday, and it was tough. The kid still hasn't been back at school. A 44-year-old man with 2 kids, and his brother had committed suicide only 2 years before that, and they found him out at the cemetery, and that's where he decided to go with his brother. So it was a very difficult situation.
Unbelievable. But again, so to me, you teach those coping skills and those communication skills and all that. You teach that from a very early age, and that's how people get through difficult parts of life. And when I'm talking about difficult, I'm talking about the stuff I've gone through in my life, the stuff Greg's gone through in his life. There's a path for you. You can do it, and it's not easy. It sucks a lot of times, and I would never kill myself, but I remember thinking a few years ago, this is why people do kill themselves, because it's bad on top of bad on top of bad on top of bad, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better, and I don't know. Like, I'm okay when I know the path. I can endure anything, but what happens when you don't know the path?
Yeah.
And I think that's where people find themselves. And if you don't have that bedrock foundation, and sometimes even when you do, if you don't know the path, that somebody hasn't, you haven't had the conversation with somebody, it's just, a permanent solution to a temporary problem. I got an email. Brook trout, is that a regional fish? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's Let's see, speckled trout is another name for it. But they are mostly only in, they're in northern Maine. I know that. They're in northern Minnesota and all across Canada. Really, it's a cold, cold water fish.
Got it. Interesting. How do you prepare such a fish?
Well, the one I use is in the pan, but we've also used foil in the barbecue with lemons and onions and apples stuffed inside. And we've also just deep fried the whole entire fish, depending on the size, for 2 to 3 minutes. And it comes out, oh God, I mean, it doesn't need much. I'm not a huge tartar sauce fan, but I definitely would not put tartar sauce on this fish.
That good.
Yeah, without a doubt. Just buttery, and like I said, the skin is so crispy and stuff. But, you know, we have Lake Superior, which is the second largest freshwater lake in the world. And sometimes those specks, the ones in the lake, they get pretty big. And I've caught a 4.5-pounder off a rock sitting on the shores of Lake Superior close to my buddy's cabin. And I thought I won the lottery, and it fed a lot of people, let me tell you.
What are the 10 biggest freshwater lakes in the world?
Well, the one in Russia is number one. I know that. Lake Superior, number two. And then you go Lake Erie, Ontario.
Hold on. Number one is?
This the one
says,
in Russia.
Wait, this is... Lake Superior is number one.
Oh, maybe in North America.
The largest freshwater lake in the world, Lake Superior, is also second largest lake in the world if one takes into account the saline Caspian Sea.
Oh. There you go. So we're number one. I'm going to get a shirt. I'm going to get a shirt.
Exactly. Lake Victoria, Lake Huron.
Yeah.
Lake Michigan's four. Holy shit, I didn't know that. Lake Tanganyika.
That's the one probably in Russia.
No, that's in Africa. Lake Baikal is in Russia.
Okay.
The Great Bear Lake, which is in Canada.
That's in Alberta or Manitoba/Alberta up there.
Right. Lake Malawi, which is in Mozambique.
Never heard of it.
The Great Silver Lake, the Great Slave Lake.
That's in Canada, northern Canada too.
The Great Slave Lake? Like, what the heck? Where does that name come from?
Huge lake trout in that lake.
Huge? What part of Canada?
Mammoth. That's in, like, used to call the Northwest Territories.
Got
up
it.
There.
Got
yeah,
it.
That's far. That's far.
And then number 10, Lake Erie. I did not know the United States had that many of the largest lakes in the world.
Wow. Yeah, for sure. Like, it's funny. Most of the time, like, even... where we live in Thunder Bay, which is butt-ass cold, it is very rare.
Hold on. So everybody listening, define butt-ass cold.
When skin freezes, uncovered skin freezes in less than a minute.
Got it. All right.
But that, what was I going to say now?
Give me a numerical value in Fahrenheit. What would that be?
Let's see. Well, when you get down there. Like minus 20, Fahrenheit, minus 30. And then if you put a 20-mile-an-hour wind on there, you're looking at like minus 46 to 47 wind chill.
What's the coldest weather you've ever been in?
I've been in minus 60, like when I had to go outside. The wind was like 35 miles an hour, and it was minus, I don't know. It ended up to be minus 59. So I say minus 60. I kind of round up. But what I was going to say, it's rare, Mac, for even the entirety of winter, which lasts almost 6 months for sure in Thunder Bay, that Lake Superior hardly ever freezes. It's only frozen in the last 25 years one time, totally over. And it's a freshwater lake. So it's so deep and it takes so long for the temperature change to occur because it's got so much water that it rarely freezes. The bays freeze. We fish like 4 feet of ice in Cloud Bay, which is 40 miles north of Thunder Bay, for lake trout in 260 feet of water.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's on a freshwater lake. And what's really weird is the water is so crystal clear. So when the ice freezes, it's clear.
Get out.
So you think you're standing on like an inch of ice, but it's literally like over 3-4 feet sometimes. And when the lake trout comes up from the depths, you can see it circling way down there as you pull it up. It's really freaky.
Wow. So it's like being on that building in Chicago where they have the glass
floor. Yes. Yes. There's a fish. Exactly.
There's a fish. Coldest day ever in North Dakota ever recorded is how cold?
Oh, I don't know. And was this with the wind chill or just ambient air temperature?
Straight air temperature.
I don't know.
60 below in partial North Dakota.
There you go.
That's out west by where Heather's from.
And that's just the air temp.
Right.
Like, so people in California or wherever they're listening, they don't understand, or it's hard to understand that when you take the regular air temperature and add the wind to it, every day or every morning when you watch the news, it says, okay, the temperature is minus 23. With the wind chill, it'll be minus, it'll feel like minus 38. And so you're like, wow. So it's like you being in a freezer and someone puts on a fan.
Right. Right.
You know, that's right. Exactly what it's like. So it's pretty weird to see, like, if you shoot a deer or something and it's that cold, you better hurry your ass and skin it because it will start freezing on you as you're cutting it.
My daughter-in-law, Susie, John's wife, is from Partial.
Yep, I know. I see her, Susie, right?
Susie, yeah.
Yep.
Susie is,
she's happy to be a mom, you could tell.
Yeah. No, they just took, John and Susie just took one of the greatest pictures. I told John, if you're smart, don't ever take another picture. They were at a wedding.
With his dresses on? With his dress uniform on?
No, in a suit. He looked like a grown-up. I'm like, whoa, check it out.
I saw it. I was at the wedding last weekend.
Right. I'm like, John, don't ever take another picture, okay?
Yeah, you're done.
You're done. Take that.
Hang it up.
Refer everybody to that. The coldest weather I was ever in was about 44 below. It was a night that we drove. I was flying back to California to go to Iraq the first time. So it had been like 2000, right around January, the first part of January of 2004. And we had to drive down to the Twin Cities because the flight from Grand Forks got canceled because of weather. And so Susan and the kids, we all hopped in the Suburban. It was so cold that you couldn't lean against the door.
Yeah,
because it's so your shoulder would be, and even with a coat on, your shoulder would be cold, and so you had this kind of lean towards the center of the car because it was so cold. That's the coldest I've ever been in.
And you have to turn the heat on and everything else, and you're praying that nothing happens to your car.
Oh, because people die, right? I mean,
Yeah.
Your car breaks down, and then they can't get to you in time, and it's that cold. And so normally, they travel is not advised, but you see people.
So when here's my question. So do you guys have, like, we have the assholes that when it says, like, when it's real bad storms and everything, they put these roadblocks up so you cannot get on the highway. And we have buttholes that go around those and then try to go on the highway because they think their vehicle is going to make it through the storm. And inevitably, they have to be rescued by state troopers or sheriff's department on snowmobiles or this and that. They got to risk their life. So you must have people like that in California, but it must be on a different scale, or for what reason?
Well, what you see, and I remember this from living out in the desert years ago when I was stationed at 29 Palms, and that is people that were taking shortcuts to Vegas. And they get off the beaten path, and their car breaks down. And they're not in very good physical shape or what have you, and they die. And so a little bit different. I mean, so when you decide, when you're like 78 and your wife's 80 and you're going to Vegas and you decide to take, hey, honey, we'll take a shortcut. Not always the best call. But those kind of gifted people, whether you talk about people that they're just going to, I've never evacuated, I never go to the basement in the tornado, or I never evacuate when there's a fire. I mean, that's how, a lot of times that, these people here out here in the fires that I mean, I've never left. It's never been that bad. I can, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, why are 18 people dead when there was plenty of warning? It's not like the fire snuck up on somebody. And it's just, it's sad. But the other part is the people that risk their lives to try to get them out of there, right, because of their own, you know, stupid decisions, you put other people's lives in jeopardy, and that's a bad part of the story too. Let's talk a little bit about food, because it is Friday. Two things that you've eaten. First of all, your love of food comes from where?
I'd say family, because that was a big emphasis always on my mother's side, which is Italian, and my dad's side, that's Polish. The traditions of each country and coming to Canada and then the United States and embracing those. But it always meant sitting at the table and sharing memories and stories and also unbelievable food. So that's where it comes from.
What about, I mean, we don't see a whole lot of Polish restaurants. They're like Irish restaurants. You don't see them. What's the best part of Polish food?
I would say the simplicity of it. I mean, Polish for decades had to survive on hardly anything, and what they use, the use of the animal as far as like a butchering a pig, is nothing goes to waste, from snout to tail. And also the variety. I mean, from pierogies to kielbasa to pickled beets to you get things from all different kinds of ways to prepare food. And it just goes hand in hand with celebration for sure. But you do not see a lot of Polish restaurants, although there is one in Thunder Bay that's pretty dim.
No, let me tell you, you don't see any Irish restaurants for good reason. Right, the foods not so much. All right, let's talk about. Give me one thing that you've eaten in the last 6 months that you say you should try this.
Well, I am a big foie gras fan, which is banned in California. So maybe I can take that off the list as far as what I eat.
Well, no, this is internet broadcasting, so it's not a local broadcast. So you could. Nope. I've heard that foie gras is disgusting.
No, my God, you slap that person in the face. It's like meat butter. It is so unbelievable. If prepared correctly, whether it be fried or...
It's a French deal, right?
Yeah, a lot of it is. A lot of it is French. But it is so good, whether it's in a spread, just a lobe of foie gras. But usually it's paired because it's got a real fatty, unctuous taste to it. It's paired with like a pear sauce or a plum or something like that, where it cuts it a little bit of sweet, a little bit of savory. And that's why I'm a big fan of it, because you could change the complexity of taste with it. And I'm not a food snob by any means. I mean, we harvested game and livers of ducks and geese forever, but the just having that, which is something very different, I would encourage anyone just to try it, especially once, although it is kind of on the spendy area, if you use it in a restaurant. But there's so many.
Now, why is it illegal in some places? Because California's not the only place that foie gras is illegal. What's the whole basis of that?
Because they force feed ducks and geese so that their livers get like overstuffed.
Oh, and so that's cruel.
Yes, that's one of the ways. But there are other ways that they're trying to make it, you know, better as far as the ducks and geese are concerned. So, but yeah, that's one of the reasons why it is bad. Yeah.
So, all right. So that's one. I have a friend who's from Paris, and he I want to say on Thanksgiving, rolled out the foie gras.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm huge into cheeses. Like, I love cheese since I was a kid. I mean,
what's your favorite favorite cheese is what?
Well, daily is Parmesan Reggiano. I mean, we get wheels of cheese that are 70 pounds at a time. And like, usually I'll get maybe 5 wheels a year, and we cut it all up and vacuum seal it and put it in the freezer so we could take it out when we want. But this cheese is aged over a year, and it has got a bite to it. And it's just can be used on so many things.
That's a serious cheese habit.
Yeah, well, it's not just for me. I give it away too as like presents because everyone knows that the cheese I give away is awesome. It's not shitty.
Here's Mr. Here's Mr. Lotus with the cheese package.
Yeah, yeah. Or you barter with it if someone comes and helps you with your driveway, shoveling your driveway.
There you go.
You know, little. I make my own pancetta, so maybe I give them a little pancetta, a little bit of cheese, so they could have pancetta and eggs with grated Parmesan for breakfast.
What is pancetta?
Pancetta is basically if you like bacon.
Yes.
Pancetta is cured pork, but it's not smoked. Bacon is smoked. And so pancetta is made with a pork belly that I season and brine or with pink salt for about a week. And then I roll it real tight in a log and tie it and then hang it in my cold room for, depending on the size of the belly, it could be a month, could be more. And it dries out just and intensifies the flavor. And you slice it. You can eat it raw or you can fry it up and it makes the best crispy bacon, or if you just want to undercook it, it's your call. But then I take the meat out and fry the eggs in the remaining juices of the pancetta. And the kids cannot get it fast enough.
Get out.
Well, with some toast and butter, Mac. Oh, my God.
Let me tell you, that's bacon's great like that, too. I mean, to me...
Who doesn't like bacon? Who does not like bacon? They're un-American.
A lot of Arabs are not fond of the pig, but they're not Americans. But it's not a taste thing. That's important.
No.
It's not taste thing. It's a
dirty, yeah.
Dirty animal thing.
Do not eat of the cloven hoof.
Exactly. But that's okay because that's more for us. No, bacon, my dad... he used to call it a bacon sandwich, but it was a piece of toast with a lot of butter on it and then like three pieces of bacon. Then you fold the piece of bread in half, right? And you had this kind of like half of a sandwich with nothing but bacon and butter. And
I told you
that thing's awesome.
I told you about my buddy, right? I think I did. Luciano Pradell is his name. So his father and mother are from the old country. And we used to go on hunting trips together. And we'd ask, you know, we'd all go together for groceries. And the first time I didn't understand, I said, we're only going for 3 days and we have like 9 pounds of bacon. And the first day we got up, Luch was up first. So he starts cooking and he makes us the other buddies that were there breakfast. And then he makes his own breakfast. He takes a pound of bacon in a pan, fries it till crispy, makes two pieces of toast, puts one down, puts the entire pound of bacon on that piece of bread, puts the other piece of bread on top, and then pours the bacon grease on top of the first piece.
Oh, come on.
The top piece, yep. And then
what kind of bread that holds that kind of bacon?
Nothing. It's soggy as shit. He eats it with a knife and fork. But he's like 6 foot tall and 150 pounds.
No way. I was going to say, you can hear his arteries hardening just by the description of that.
He could walk or run for miles, Mac.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, I forgot to do what I call shithole weather, and that is like everybody, you know, not everybody, but people send me the weather. There's a woman who lives in Churchbridge, Saskatchewan, that listens to this all the time. Have you been to Churchbridge?
I have not been to Churchbridge. I have not. There's so many little towns in Saskatchewan, but I've been to Regina.
Describe Saskatchewan for everybody.
You could see for miles and miles, and nothing but flatness, wheat fields, canola, barley, stuff like that, right. And everybody waves to you on the highway.
Because a human being. Most people don't realize it, but that great breadbasket of our country, right, that starts down in Oklahoma and extends through like Nebraska, Iowa, all those farm states, right, up through Minnesota, North Dakota, that plain extends north into Canada. And when you're in Saskatchewan, you can see forever. And anyway, her name's Bev, and the current temperature is let's see, currently overcast. Winds out of the southeast at 7, 37 degrees, feels like 32 this afternoon. Looking for a high of 64 with winds out of the southwest at 4. And then she sent me a picture. A local artist painted this mural on the side of our co-op lumberyard building. The old-fashioned air pump is where the current air hose is located. So it's a picture of the old gas station.
Oh, yeah.
In a town of a few thousand people that's got a lumber co-op. It's got the grain elevator, right?
Of course. And, how many bars and churches?
And six bars.
Yeah. And five churches.
Exactly. No, but I'll tell you what, it is awesome stuff. Hey,
you know, when you were talking about the gas station there, I was just talking to my wife about, there was a show on TV where this guy pulled up for gas, and the gas attendant came out and said, "Regular or leaded?" And I remember that, you know, as a kid. You remember, right? Pumping? Like, there's no more lead gas anymore.
No. I mean, I remember, you know, my mom smoking her Parliament cigarettes, oh, right? Yeah. And the guy would come out, and they'd say, "Regular Ethel." Yeah. And they would, like, my mom would hand the guy the credit card because she never paid in cash. And they had that little thing where you – was a bunch of levers where you would program in the numbers, and then yep, they would put the card on that thing, and they'd slide it and hand you my mom the little plastic thing, and she would sign off on it. And when the self-serve gas came, I was, yes, like, what is my mom gonna do? Right? my mom never went to gym class or pumped a gallon of gasoline in her life. What is she gonna do?
Do they have any full service gas stations in California? Because in Grand Forks, there's still two stations that'll do that.
That'll pump your gas. I don't. You know what? I don't know of any gas station that I've been to where you hear some kind of noise mechanism where somebody would walk out and say, "Can I help you?" Doesn't exist.
Ping, ping,
ding, ding. Doesn't exist.
So I wonder if wherever your listeners are, if they could email you, where, like, whatever town they're in, whatever state, to see if they're still, because maybe North Dakota is still behind the times like it always is. But I know when you go to, like, Minot or a place like that, they still have full service where they check your fluids, they check your oil, and they pump your gas.
This is an update from Churchbridge. Only the bottom third of Saskatchewan is flat. The next third is rolling hills, and the top is all trees and lakes. Five churches, one bar, just for the record. There you have
that,
it.
That bar must be packed.
Oh, my God. Hey, if you want to get anything done in town, where do you go to make sure word gets passed?
Oh, for sure.
You could go to five churches or one bar. Let's make, yes, this official. This is from...
Hey, hold on. My dog is going crazy, Max. Someone's at the door. So just a sec. Go ahead.
All right. This is from... this is the second shithole weather update. This is from Salem, Massachusetts, from Chris. 59 degrees and falling. Winds out of the northeast at 15 miles an hour plus. Solid cloud cover. Plan of the day. Get shit done. On the hard for the boat, Chris in Webster, Massachusetts. And there's a picture of Winter Island Park. Saskatchewan, when you drive north from out of North Dakota, and North Dakota's sparse, right? You drive, that's what Greg's saying. When you see somebody on the highways, the interstate's called the Trans-Canada, you know, highway. But not a whole lot of people in that driving that part.
No, I wonder too. I guarantee that place in Saskatchewan has a wicked cafe, or, you know, a diner type, more of a cafe because they serve breakfast too. But I bet you they got like homemade gravy and hot turkey or beef sandwiches, or, and their fries are really good.
And the food, the food is awesome. You know that.
It's, yeah, like turkey dinner or whatever, right. Something would be awesome.
No, it's you know, it's small town life. whether it be in Canada or the United States. You go in, and the people are normal people, and they're hardworking, you know, people that, that take care of themselves and other people. And then, but the, you know, and those are gathering places, right? And there's those, whether it's the diner, the bar, or the church, which tends to be the big three, or the grain elevator, you know, that's why that town's there. That town is there because the railroad tracks got put through there, and that's where they sited the grain elevator, because there's probably a good intersection or population center close to it, and there you have it. And then the history gets tracked through that. So no, interesting stuff. The I don't like anything I've eaten in the last 6 months that I would recommend to you. I don't think I've eaten anything vastly different. That I did have a seafood.
You told me about that last week. It was crab and lobster. Yeah. I was telling Heather about it.
That would be the only thing that I would say was absolutely. If you could get the white sauce right in that. I would tell you, you know, with avocado on it, that's probably one of the most unique things I've eaten in probably the last 6 months. Here's an email, Mac.
Oh, go ahead.
Does your friend Greg eat healthy, or just eat what he wants? I've been forced into a more healthy diet. Does he have anything that he would eat that he would say it's moderately healthy, but it tastes great? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I eat healthy during the week, and I have a cheat day on Saturday where I get what I want and how much I want it. But I also practice a little intermittent fasting, and I've dropped a lot of weight recently. So, but, you know, when it comes to something eating healthy, yeah, I grill almost everything. But one of the marinades I found, or something like, for example, lamb chops that, you know, I don't know if it's something different, but you can also do it with a beef, a cheaper cut, maybe a sirloin of beef. And I just take fresh rosemary, fresh thyme, and maybe a couple or three heads of garlic chopped up, put it in the food processor, and put a dash of cayenne pepper in, and then olive oil. And you blend it up, and with the fresh rosemary and fresh thyme, combined with the olive oil and the emulsifier and the little cayenne, it starts breaking down the meat. And what I do is I usually grill more than I need, especially with chicken or pork, because the leftovers I cut up into pieces and can fry into almost anything from brown rice to put into pasta, to make lettuce wraps, which are, you know, you could put the meat that you have along with any kind of vinaigrette or any kind of dressing that you'd like and make a lettuce wrap with. Or there's ways of make it into, you know, the bread with that's heavy fiber and heavy grain bread and make a sandwich, like chicken salad sandwich. So, I mean, that marinade is very simple. Or the way that it breaks down the meat, but it works really well with lamb and beef. But as far as eating healthy and stuff like that, I think the best way to do it is to make it as easy on yourself as possible, because then you won't want to just go by the drive-thru and grab a couple burgers, because no one wants to cook a huge meal when they get home from work or do whatever. They have kids running around and shit like that. So, I mean, if you want to eat better, there's so much shit on the internet as far as the foodnetwork.com, or look at the star rating on the recipe. And as far as the calorie, they have all the nutritional information there. But substituting things with Greek yogurt instead of sour cream and lower fat cheese, or no one says you can't, you know, deprive yourself of things. It's just got to be in moderation, portion control. As you talked about, mental health has got lots to do with several factors, one including some exercise. Right. That doesn't mean bench pressing or squatting. It means going for a walk 30 to 40 minutes, you know, gardening, doing something like that. I mean, exercise does not have to mean, you know, enrolling in a gym or getting a Peloton or all that shit. So I think with all that and enjoying a drink once in a while, if that's what you prefer, or if you're able to do that, but not two or three a day, every day, and stuff like that. I mean,
unless you Unless you need to. No, I don't. Well. No, but it becomes a form of, you know, the way you numb yourself. And I can tell you with the people, it's almost a given part of the story for a lot of people that I wind up crossing paths with. And then I started drinking, and then my life went this way. So, but again, as you said, anything in moderation. I have another email. Hey, Mac. Enjoying your discussion with your friend Greg. Is he an American citizen? Is he a dual citizen? He's obviously made his home here in the United States, and we're happy to have people like him. Talk to us about his citizenship.
So, I've been an American citizen now for 16 years. And when I married my wife and then, obviously started the process, which was extremely expensive. And then since then, sponsored my mother and father to come down here so they could be closer to the grandkids. And they've been American citizens for 10 years, almost 10 years now. They live in Arizona and also sponsored them. So we did it the right way and very proud to not only be a citizen here, but also vote and be hopefully a productive member of the community here. But ask some people, I don't know if that's true.
You would get mixed. I forgot to tell a story last week. We were talking about, I can't remember what we were talking about. It was sports, or it might have been being a cake eater from Minnesota. So Greg and I go down to Minneapolis, and I think we were doing like hockey-related stuff because at the time, the University of North Dakota, the Fighting Sioux Hockey Program was its name at the time. So we're down there, and we like do an hour of our show a day, and then the tournament, the league tournament was there, and it was awesome. It was like Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, St. Cloud, Minnesota, Duluth. So it was all these huge hockey powers, and it was always a great tournament, great atmosphere in St. Paul. The venue was awesome. So we're in this suite watching this game, and Greg is sitting next to this glass partition, and there's Minnesota fans on the other side. Now, Greg is like 6'6 and 300 pounds. This guy, I won't say he was beacon Greg, but the Gophers came back and went ahead of the Fighting Sioux. And this guy starts, I don't know, he made some gesture and taunted Greg, right? So North Dakota goes ahead, comes back and goes back ahead. And then they scored another goal. And Greg started pounding on the glass. And the guy, it was like he was looking out of the corner of his eye, and you know, his wife said, "Don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact with him." So he sounds very measured right now, and he is most of the time.
Don't mess with my hockey.
Don't poke the dog with a stick. Okay.
No.
Don't mess with my hockey team. Hey, what are your thoughts on, you know, all these bubbles and all these sports leagues and all that? Do you have any thoughts on that? Is that just, hey, you got to do what you got to do to get the season in?
Well, I think there's a sense of normalcy when you know, Americans look at sports and they want their football or their basketball, their baseball, but also the billionaires that run those places, they're billionaires for a reason. So with the TV contracts and everything and all the money, the safety precautions that they have to pay for and stuff like that to get their product off the ground, I think it's, you know, I don't see it as a bad thing. I don't see it's taking away from, you know, the survival of other Americans. That's the way I see it. So, you know, when you look at how many people bet on sports or fantasy sports or this, that, how many people are in a better place, like mentally, happy wise, that they get to do some stuff that's actually normal, Mac. You know, that's my thought. I mean, is it the most ideal situation? No. Could the money be used, you know, a different way? Yes, probably. But that, is it their job? I don't know.
No, honestly, it was miserable in this country without anything to distract us from, right?
Yeah.
This political fight that is going on, and then the Floyd thing and all that stuff. It's just like you can't turn on the TV. It's just like it's no. I agree with you. Do you think that the Big Ten last Saturday, right? They voted to start playing again. The Pac-12 just got UCLA and USC just got told that, yeah, we don't have any other restrictions for you. So I would think the Pac-12 will follow suit. Are those financial moves? Hey, look, if all these other, because I said something last week that I thought, you know, Notre Dame's attitude about bringing kids to campus, I thought was important for the country because we seem to roll over easy and quit now. And there was a time in our nation's history, and the president of Notre Dame said this, we held classes through the Spanish-American flu. We held classes through World War I, World War II, and he names all these crises. So our job is to find a way to get through this, not to simply quit. And if we don't try to fight our way through this and to learn the lessons that we need to learn to do these things, then the education isn't as valuable. So I think we have a responsibility to find a safe way through this, and we're starting to figure it out. And they brought students back, students went to parties, people got sick, and then they didn't have any fatalities, and then their case, and then after the young people did that, and everybody's awareness got raised with, hey, look, these are the rules while we're here, and everybody's got to do it, their cases have plummeted to a fraction of the level. Do you think for universities this is a financial thing? Because the hole that they're in financially without these, you know, without the basketball tournament last year, you know, without the, you know, major universities and the football and the revenue that brings in to their universities, that's not an insignificant financial piece of a university's revenue.
No, without a doubt, it's totally financial. You'd be fooling yourself if you didn't think that was, if not the total cause, a major majority of it, because they've had to cut so many sports, and with the TV contracts and the Big Ten having their own television network, right, and ACC and SEC and stuff like that, they can't sell commercials. They have been starting to let in 7 to 10 to whatever 1,000 fans were at Notre Dame last week when they played Wake, you know, to offset some of the things. It also puts people back into jobs like the ushers and everything, you know, whatever kind of parking attendance, stuff like that. So, I mean, there are ways around it to be safe, but does everyone adhere to the rules? You know, you got these anti-maskers and idiots that, you know, this is all fake or it's conspiracy theory and all that. Look, this is where we're at right now. Either we can, you know, take what the doctors say, or if you've, God forbid, you've had someone that has passed away from COVID, that was, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 30s. I mean, geez, there was a Texas football or hockey coach that died yesterday, 28 years old. Didn't know they had COVID, couldn't sleep, took a sleeping pill and died because of the combination of COVID and the breathing and everything else. So, I mean, wow. Yeah, you can't roll over and die. But if you don't think this is financial, and the Big Ten, you know, he specifically said, we will not revisit this at any time after the decision was made. Now they're opening up because they've seen that it can happen. There might be some hiccups or canceled games. And then next thing you know, the Pac-12 for the two hardest schools, which are in California, no restrictions. Yeah, they're going to follow suit because they could start up in a month, Mac. And they're talking about 8 games plus a conference championship. And then they can maybe get in, Ohio State can get into the national championship game. So it's a whole bunch of money, despite the fact that stadiums won't be full.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because you can imagine, right, the accountant sitting there at the table when we're going to cancel all this. And they're looking at the president of the university going, you really don't want to do this. Don't want to do this because we can't make up this revenue. And we've got, you know, we have no students in all those dormitories. Well, we're still paying bills for that stuff. We have no meals. We're still paying for that infrastructure too, right? There was profit sewed into all that, and we're putting into funding this. All that revenue's gone, all right? And now if we lose athletic department revenue, you know, and it's not going to be, you know, we're going to take a haircut, and it's not going to be with a pair of scissors either, right? It's going to be with the buzz machine. And, oh, my God, our higher ed's going to get impacted like that. So, to me, whenever it's like the accounts, like, give me just – all I need is a little piece of dirt to put a toe on, and I'll get them to go. And it looks like – and that's what I mean. The whole – You know, the SEC had the same attitude. It's like, hey, we're going to try to play. We're going to figure this out. We're not going to, you know. And I think there's some, I mean, that's how the United States was settled. You drive across the nation and you drive across the plains and the Rocky Mountains and you know, you drive through Canada and you just see the same thing. Well, it didn't get settled because everybody quit when it got difficult. And I understand, like, nobody wants to die. So the first thing is, you know, you got to protect the people that are more fragile. And then look at the numbers. Look at the numbers. And so, I don't know. But it's interesting. What about, I had a question for you relative to something closer to the boat. But I forgot it. It must have been a lie. All right. What do you got going on this weekend?
Well, Lawson, my youngest son, has a football game tonight against West Fargo at 7 p.m. and it's decent out, so that'll be a treat. Instead of
West Fargo normally has a pretty good football team, do they?
They do. The Packers of West Fargo.
The Packers. They were like they used to be out in the sticks. Now they're not in the sticks anymore. They're out in the suburbs.
They got passed over by the suburbs, and now even like they live on in the middle of all the rich people.
So they got. They have all the kids going there, and the schools that used to be, oh, I got to ask you, Central beat Red River, I heard.
Yeah. No, there wasn't a beating. I mean, it wasn't just a beating. They beat them. Like, it was not even close. They deserved to win that football game, and they played really well.
Wow. Coach Berg, who Mike Berg was the NFL High school coach of the year, I want to say in 2009 or 10 or something like that. Brooks Bollinger, who played for the Minnesota Vikings and a couple other teams, he nominated Coach Berg. And Coach Berg's one of those people in your community that, first of all, he's a great man. He happens to be a football coach. And he's one of the guys who changes lives. You know, young men went through that program, and, you know, all these years later, I think he won one state championship right towards the end of his career.
Yeah, that's it.
And but just a great guy, and he sent me a message, and he coached at Central High School, and said,
but coach should know though that if he's calling to get me fired up, I'm the last guy that would give any excuses, number one, and I wouldn't pay Central their due when they won the football game and played well.
No, Greg and I used to do high school football games, and Greg used to look for a way to get the word pandemonium into the
broadcast.
Into the broadcast. We'd be up doing play-by-play and color. And when somebody, like the crowd under, you know, we're in some high school press box and the crowd underneath us, and when they would go crazy, Greg would drop the pandemonium.
Every time. Absolute pandemonium here.
It was awesome. I'll tell you, we would go do hockey. We'd do high school sports. It was awesome because you knew some of the kids. You knew the families.
Yeah.
And, but
everybody in the community you knew that was there.
You're right. And so, but it's, great nights. In fact, that game that gets played by the two high schools in Grand Forks is called the Cushman Classic, named after an Air Force, I think, captain when he was shot down and killed, Cliff Cushman. And it's a big deal still in the community. And they tailgate before the game, and the two high schools in the city play, and it's a cool thing and a good deal. And we used to have a blast. All right, you got any big plans?
Good. No, that's it.
So, that game's tonight.
Yeah, it's tonight, and then my daughter is got volleyball. I think that's Monday though, so we can wait for that. Right. That's it. Pretty much an easy weekend. So I appreciate it. If you ever need anything, you know where to call.
All right, bud. Have a great one.
All right, take care, everybody.
There you have it. The one and only Greg Lotus here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. Pandemonium. You know, so you're doing the broadcast, and he'd say, pandemonium here at Cushman Field. And I'd start laughing, right? And then Patrick, my number two son, he'd be running the board back at the studio. And he'd, like, text me, Lotus in the pandemonium is awesome. And funny. Greg used to do a radio show on Saturday with his dad. What the hell was the name of it? It was called The Lowdown. Right? The Lowdown with the Lotus family. Oh, and his dad and he, oh my God, it was so funny. Anyway, he's a great friend. And very proud of his Canadian heritage, but loves being in America. And let me tell you, he's a giant guy. But his heart's bigger than his body. If you need help and you go to him for help, he will move mountains to help you. So just, and I know what I meant to ask him. What was his favorite dish at Kim's restaurant? I'll write that down. But, yeah, Greg Lotus. All right, if you're just tuning in hour one, you'll find in National Review an article entitled How Journalism Died. And pretty amazing example just this week about, you know, you could have Arab nations formally sign an agreement to normalize relations and it just be ignored. And I'm not beating the drum for Donald Trump. I'm just saying I'm very observant relative to journalism in this country. And it sucks. It's horrible. And I think the thing that I find most interesting about the article is the last paragraph. And it says this, the last two. The news as we once understood it is dead. It has been replaced by the unnews, a political narrative created by partisans who believe the noble ends of destroying Trump and then but fill in the blanks. Because it's not like this style is going to go away. Right? Because they really, it's not Donald Trump. They do hate him. But they hate the conservative agenda. So if Trump were to be replaced by somebody else, you would just pencil in that name. Right? Did destroying fill in the blank justify any biased means necessary? Including destroying their own reputation and their own craft. So, it's a problem. It's a problem. There's another interesting piece in there that caught my eye that I haven't read it yet, but I would recommend to you. It's called China Has Bought Our Silence. Director Judge Apatow criticizes the film industry for ignoring the Uyghur genocide. Apatow, a director of comedies including Knocked Up and The 40-Year-Old Virgin, made his comments after Disney released a live-action remake of Mulan that includes scenes filmed in Xinjiang, where China is carrying out the mass internment and sterilization of Uyghur Muslims. Disney thanked the Chinese government bodies involved in the repression in the credits for the film. The Chinese film market could overtake the U.S., and Disney's Mulan remake, which cost $200 million to produce, was in part designed to make inroads into that market. Quote, a lot of giant corporate entities have businesses with countries around the world, Saudi Arabia, China, and they're just not going to criticize them, and they're not going to let their shows criticize them, or they're not going to air documentaries that go deep into truthful areas because they just make so much money, Apatow told NBC. So while we're all going, can we say this joke or not say that joke, on a much bigger level, They've just completely shut down critical content about human rights abuses in China. So, anyway, interesting. You might want to check that out. But we'll talk about that in hour one. And then Greg comes on. And one of my former Marines asked about, kind of interesting, he and I have never actually discussed this, but asked, how do you, you know, is there a difference in raising girls? And I think there is, but I don't think that those differences are substantial. The girls need the same tools boys do. Right, they're a little bit different, but I think those dissimilarities are small, and that if you raise your girls right, they need to be everything your boys are, right? You know, fighters, tough, you know, capable of intellectual discourse, capable of sorting out bullshit from truth, and not being afraid to do that. And so all those tools. So it's kind of an interesting conversation, if you're just tuning in, that Greg and I had. So have a great day on a Friday. And if you didn't hear yesterday's show, make sure you listen to that. Make sure you listen to the interview I did with my friend Tim earlier this week. And then Grant Newsham's piece. So, yeah, all good here on All Marine Radio. So have a great weekend on a Friday, All Marine Radio. Out.